Well, thanks, everybody. How'd the weekend go?
Good.
Good? All right. So we're going to talk today about how to convert your traditional Roth or 401k IRA to a Roth. Everybody knows, maybe you don't. I'm going to talk about it. But you can convert a traditional to a Roth. We're going to show you how to do it at a discount so we pay less taxes. Okay? So that'll be key. And we'll talk about the assets that allow us to do that.
Okay.
So first disclaimer, this is educational, we're talking about it, I'm not giving you tax advice, you're not paying me for that, so it is educational only. Go ahead. All right, so I am a CPA, 35 years as a CPA and an active investor, so I do what you guys do. That's what I love real estate, I got lots of rentals, I've done lots of things, flipped houses, built brand new stuff. And I basically specialize in tax and financial strategies now to reduce your taxes and increase your wealth. I've been involved in previous multiple private placements, syndications. I've done hundreds of valuations over my career. But we've been doing these IRA 401k evaluations for about a little over three years. Go ahead, Sharon. Next. All right, so... we're going to talk about what a traditional IRA looks like, right? So traditional IRA or 401k, I'm just going to say IRA, but 401k applies. So a traditional IRA, you put your money into the IRA. After you put the money in, can you get it? Just go ahead and get them all there. You receive a deduction, right? So when you put your money into that traditional, you got a tax deduction for it, okay? So you saved on your taxes. You will return those. So let's say you start taking it out of your traditional. You are going to end up paying tax on it. Everybody knows you put it in, you get your tax deduction now, and then when you retire, you start taking the money out. All the earnings and all the original amounts you put in, you got to pay the IRS back. So it's just what they've done is given you a temporary loan. That's all they've done, interest-free. Now you got to pay the tax back that you paid in. If you're in a lower bracket, you will pay less taxes. But if you've, what I always tell people is if you really do this right, you're going to be in a higher tax bracket when you retire than when you worked. That's the goal. Don't be the goal, I'm in a low tax bracket. What do I want that? I want to be in a high tax bracket. I don't want to pay taxes. But I want to have more income than when I was actually working. So a Roth IRA, you're going to put your money, you put your money into that, you get no deduction, right? So a Roth IRA is getting no deduction whatsoever. The benefit, though, is you don't pay any tax when you take it out, okay? No profit on any of the money coming out, right? So I put it in, it earns. I never pay tax on it ever again. And what's nice is when my heirs inherit that to Roth, they don't pay any tax on it either. Whereas if they inherit my traditional, they're going to pay tax on that. They have no choice. They have to pay tax on it. So the other thing you have is no RMDs. So you probably heard, maybe you've heard, when you reach 73, the IRS says, hey, listen, you got to start taking that money out. We're not going to let you leave it in there for all this time. Why don't you start taking money out? So basically, they have a table with RMD, it's a table of your life expectancy. And you're going to basically, with some assumptions of returns, it's going to calculate the requirement of distribution so that you, in theory, take all your money out by the time you reach the age they tell you you're going to die. Okay? Now, they're never right, but that's the tables they use. All right, so here's the problem. You have retirement funds in a traditional IRA, right? You've gotten all the tax benefits, right? That's awesome. So I put $100K in my traditional over the course of time. And let's say I was in the 40% tax bracket, right? So I took the $40,000. I contributed $100,000. The IRS gave me a tax benefit of $40,000. I'm in the 40% tax bracket. So I got to put $40,000 in my pocket. That's good, Everybody likes that? Likes when the IRS gives us money and we don't give them? But when you take it out, remember we said you're going to have to pay tax when you take it out? Well, the problem is we don't want to pay tax on that distribution, right? I would like to get it out without paying tax on that, right? So here's a solution, sort of. We convert that traditional to a Roth. That's simply saying to our custodian, we want to convert our assets in that. So if I had stocks, bonds, mutual funds, or real estate or whatever, I want to convert that over to a Roth. Well, they say, that's fine. The IRS lets you do it. There's no income limitations. So I can convert that $100,000 to a Roth, but now the IRS says, if I do that, because the Roth I'm never going to pay tax on, I am now going to have to pay in tax to them. So if I got the deduction of $40,000, if I got the $40,000 in my pocket when I put it in, when I roll it over without a discount, I'm going to pay the $40 back. But it, and then earns everything it earns from then on out, and the money I put in is not taxed at all. So you're never going to pay tax on it, never on the increase in value. The problem is it's the pain. Go back. The pain is in writing that check, right? I like the 40 going in, but I don't want the 40 going out. I just don't, even if I've got the money, I just don't want to write that check. The other thing is, I have to write the check from my personal account. I can't write the check from the IRA, okay? Now, if I'm over 60, I can. We're not going to go into it. Over 59 and a half, I can, but I don't recommend it. So what if we could cut that tax bill? That's what you want, right? I got my 40 in my pocket. Now I want to convert it. So what we're going to do is you put the 100K in the IRA. You then buy an asset at $100,000. When you do that, if it's the right asset, I'm going to be able to value that asset for you. And you're going to get a discount on that. So We'll value the asset. We will apply that discount. You're still going to pay some taxes, okay? You can't eliminate it all. It's not, there's no freebie, there's no free lunch. You're going to pay some tax, but we could lower that tax bill anywhere from 20 to 80%. I had one where we lowered it by 95%, okay? Now, you may think that's great, but actually they just had a bad investment, but So not always good. Some people are like, I lost money, it's going to be great. Well, no, I'd rather make money and pay a little tax rather than lose money, actually lose money and pay tax and not pay tax. So evaluation has to be done even if you're not cutting the tax bill. If you roll that $100,000 investment over, you are with equity trust, you have your investment in there and you're going to roll it over regardless of whether I value it for a discount. Somebody has to value it because a custodian has to know what the value of that asset is. If it's stocks and bonds, mutual funds, that's easy, right? We just go to the market, we know what it is, we convert it, no big deal. The other ones, many who have 401ks or IRAs that are self-directed know that every January, Quest or Equity Trust or any of the other ones, they always ask you to provide a value. So we've got to provide that value when we convert that over, no matter what. So why do we apply a discount? So, go ahead, you can go to the whole thing. So first, we have to value the actual asset you invested in. Okay, there are certain assets that are good to do this, and certain times that we don't have to do it. Let's say I put $100,000 in today into Sharon's apartment complex, right? So I put it in this apartment complex, any syndication. Syndication is a good example, right? So I put that in there. Guess what? When I put it in there, do I have any control? No. Normally, the operating agreement says, you're going to put this money in, Scott, and that's good. And the PPM says, you know, I'm going to take your firstborn when you put your money in because they want you to know that you could lose your money. So I'm going to put it in. Sharon is going to be in control, total control. I can't say boo. I just have no rights. The other thing, usually the operating agreements will say that I can't sell it without Sharon, who's the operator, approving my sale. So those are problems. Things like lack of control, lack of marketability, lack of liquidity too. Sometimes an investment is not going to run, you know, where you know it's going to run 5 years. So I can't even look, I mean, I can't even get out of this thing. And then lack of performance, to give you an idea, that would be basically the asset is going very badly and it doesn't have it. It could, like I had a guy with a, he had bought a, he took his 401k, he bought a crypto, all he set up a blocker C corp, okay, and what that is basically is the 401k invested in that C corporation into a crypto farm. He was gonna mine, I mean, not farm, but a mine. He was gonna crypto mine, right? He bought the computers. Well, when he bought it, Bitcoin was going to $200,000 or $300,000. That didn't happen, did it? So that didn't happen, and his machines he never got to put in place. So therefore, they had aged. You know, computers, right? A year later, they're worth nothing. So we got to get him a discount of about 70% on his investment, but a lot of that was for lack of performance. So the best investments for a discount, okay, you have no control over the operation of the decisions, all right? If it says Sharon's in total control, but if I want, I can vote her out, guess who's in control? I am, right? So I don't want to have that. And you don't have to have, the other thing is you're relying on another's approval for the sale, which we talked about. And normally it says that they can withhold it at their discretion. It's like that, you know, no questions asked refund. Well, this is a no questions asked. You, if they say you can't do it, you can't do it. Okay? So good things are syndications. So if you get into an apartment syndication, syndication to buy notes, whatever it would be, those are good things because, again, in those in a syndication, typically you do not have those two items. Yes? You can get a note. Notes in and of themselves are meant to be long-term. So it's usually that the note is not performing, and the note is, or the note's at a low interest rate. So right now, interest rates, right? Homeowner, they're paying 8% now, right? And you got a note for 4%. Am I going to buy that note at face value? No. I'm going to discount. I'm going to make you discount it so that I get my return up to 8 or 10%. Okay? So those are the types of things you typically have with notes. And there actually is a company. What's strictly a note, we have a company that we'll use to disvalue the note. They actually are a company that buys and sells notes. Much more cost effective for them to do it, but the notes can work, but you've got to have a reason that you would discount it. Because if you, really a valuation is what a willing party outside, not related, would be willing to pay for your investment. Okay? So minority shareholder in a company. Some people don't have a syndication, they've just got minority interest in a company. I had a guy who had he's invested in a company that's doing some biotech stuff. You know, that's a great market, but it's real risky, isn't it? It's risky. He's a minority shareholder, so it's all that type of thing. So, and the stock is, it can't be sold in the open market. If you had, like, P&G stock, I mean, yeah, you're a minority, but guess what? I know exactly what P&G is selling for right now. So there's no discount. A partnership structured properly. We had two guys who said, hey, we want to buy this property together. And so I actually had them, they end up with, we had John Heyer set up their LLC because John knew how to do it properly. And they set it up so that the two were 50-50 owners, but they hired a manager who they trusted, okay? And that person had total control. No ownership at all, but they had total control. Right? Now, the only thing was they could, if they both agreed 100%, they could throw her out. And then they, with the operating agreement was written that they couldn't sell for 4 years. They couldn't get out for 4 years. Right? So that's an example of something you can structure at any time to do that. So let's look at an example, a non-discounted. So you take $100,000, invest it in a basic asset using traditional funds, right? 40% tax bracket, convert to a Roth, you're going to pay that $40,000 back. So the discountable is you got 100 grand invested in a discountable asset that we talked about, 40% tax bracket. We perform the valuation, and we determine the value is about $50,000. We'll get, when you do that, about not necessarily a minimum, but it's about 50%. You're going to get a 50% discount. So you're going to convert that to a Roth. If you don't convert it to a Roth, then that's value it. Because at that point, it's already in the Roth, right? There's no sense in valuing it in a Roth. We want to value it when it's in the traditional. We convert it to a Roth, and now we pay our tax bill of 20. Okay, I saved 20 in taxes. Think about this. Over the course of time, I put the 100 in traditional, and I put 40 in my pocket, right? 40% tax bracket. It's in my pocket. Now I do this. Just when I do this, I convert it at $50,000 in value. The same investment. Convert it. The government says, we want 40% of that $50,000. So I got to reach in my pocket. Remember the 40 they gave me. I'm going to reach in and give them 20 back. My investment got into a Roth, and I made 20 grand in profit, all from the government. Isn't that nice? That's what we like to see, when the government is willing to give us money. So when is it best to convert? Actually, usually 1 to 3 months after you invested in the asset. It depends on the underlying asset, but remember I said the first thing we have to do is value the underlying asset. Well, if you put 100 grand into Dairy Queen, and it's been 3 years, and now it's the best Dairy Queen in the United States. Now your investment went from 100, let's say it tripled in value. So now your asset's worth 300. I'll still get a discount of 50%, but since I waited and it had all that appreciation, the underlying asset was worth 300, not 100. So at that point, I'm going to get a 50% discount still, but it's going to be off 300, not 100. Does that make sense? Because it's gone up in price. So you want to do it sooner before it gets all that benefit. So the other thing is, I don't have to, if you do it right in the first 1 to 3 months, if I take $100,000 and I put it with Sharon, and it's 2 months later, has anything really happened to my money? No. She might have actually bought a building. Has she turned it around? Been a value? Nothing's happened in that first 1 to 3 months. So I don't have to spend the time or your money valuing the asset itself. I can just give you the discount. I can do the valuation of your investment, your $100,000 being at that. So the other thing at that point, again, there's no chance that the asset's rising in value. Now, could it have dropped? There are some examples where, you know, we all put our money in this thing, and then, you know, it was all predicated on borrowing at 2%, and they just hiked the rates, now we got to pay 8%. So there's a problem with our investment, right? We invested in this asset, and we're supposed to pay 2% interest, now we're paying 8%. So there could be an example of that. But normally, it's pretty cut and dry if you just do it in the first 1 to 3 months. Oh, go ahead.
So, in valuing the asset, let's say you have profit in your traditional IRA.
Yep.
And the valuation is based on an appraisal, right? And maybe the appraisal is, you know, at market, maybe it's a little bit low market. But there is a potential for the value of that property to go up, obviously.
Right. So her comment was, she's got a property in her traditional IRA. She's already got an appraised value on it. Would it be a candidate? Because it is going to go up in value later. So it's a good candidate. You want to get it to the Roth. The question is, can you discount it? The problem is, you have total control, right?
Well, no, because it's in a self-directed IRA.
But it's your IRA, right? You can do with it whatever you want. I mean, within the rules. Yeah, that is not a... You are the decision maker. So therefore, no discount for that. And you don't have a discount because I can't sell it. Yes, you can. You can decide to put it on the market and sell it, right?
But it's based on the appraisal, right? So you're not discounting the appraisal amount. You're just establishing a valuation.
Well, your appraisal already established the valuation, and there's no way to discount that.
Exactly.
Right.
But it still can't go up.
I understand. You would want to convert it. I just am not going to get you a discount. Does that make sense? You just don't have those things that we talked about. Those are not part of that asset. Yeah. All right. So they're about $1,600 to do a evaluation. Okay, this is all real money. Like we talked about, if you were in my cost seg time, we talked about that. That gives you depreciation faster, but if you kept it the whole life of the asset, still same depreciation, and when you sell it, you gotta recapture it. This is real savings. You're gonna actually, and I saved my $20,000. I made my $20,000 in my example. We will do some discounts for multiple assets, same IRA owner, just because we get some economies of scale. And we have had, if you're in a syndication and you know there's five other people who are going to get into that, if there's five or more, we'll discount them usually to about $1,300. Not a lot of money, but it can help. Yeah.
Say that again. How much for multiple?
Huh?
What was that number? I didn't quite
syndication people. So if you have multiple syndication people, about five. So if I can do, in other words, I only have to read the operating agreement once and dig through it, right? If there's five people and they have five different syndications, I've got to read through all that wonderful PPM and operating agreement, that kind of stuff. And so if you can get five of them, like I do one group out of New York, every time somebody comes into the fund with a traditional IRA or 401k, they pass their name on to us. We do a 15-minute call. We explain the process. They decide to do it. One guy put $750,000 in that fund, in a traditional. So we valued it about $375,000. He has to pay tax on that. Remember, too, he's got to pay tax on that $375,000. So don't always remember that when you're going to do this. If you're not going to actually convert it, then don't appraise it. So he converted it, saved 40%. He was in the 40% tax bracket. So there's a lot of savings. And by the way, he only paid me $1,300. Because it doesn't matter what the value of the asset is, it's all work that we're talking about. So again, assumes we don't need to value the asset. So if you've been in there for 2 years and I have to value the asset, that's going to go up. And I can't tell you the price because it just depends. We would typically take a look at it and tell you how much it would run. If you've been in the asset for a long time, we got to value the asset first. Then we apply the discounts. It's going to significantly increase the cost. Now, when I say significantly, you're going from $1,600, you could go to $3,000, $4,500. But if you're going to save $40,000 in taxes, $20,000 in taxes, it's a real savings, so it's probably still worth it. There are lots of issues that I now have to be in communication with the syndicator, if it's in a syndication, to try to figure out what the value is. Yeah.
$100,000 to Sharon's syndication.
Yep.
You say you do it a couple months after you put your money in. What's the general range of discount on a new or a recent syndication?
About 50,000. All right, I'm 50%. Be about 50% discount. So that's, and we pick the pretty exact. Right, there's no performance issues. You just put the money in. You really just have the control, the marketability. There's a liquidity issue potentially, but about 50% usually. And then you could add on some other ones. There are some other risk factors you could add on. But understand, discounts are stacked. So if we said there's also a discount for performance of 10%, we're first going to discount it for control, marketability. So 10% of the remaining 50, right, that is going to be equivalent to 5%. So you just, the discounts stack, and they don't, like, I can't list all these discounts that add up to more than 100%, and you would get it negative, like they owe you money, or they, you know, literally. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's not a little weird here, the asset that you buy with the traditional IRA funds, is that asset value have to be aligned? Is that how you're doing
it? No.
Just the fact that you're making this change.
It is just the fact that you invested. So the idea of discounting for control and marketability, right? those are over a century old. I'll give you an example. Let's say I have a company with 100 shares, and I give my kids 49%. Now, again, we've just been doing this IRA part for about a little over 3 years, but this is common practice. And the IRS even acknowledges that in a document. It's not an official position for discounts, but they acknowledge they can be very big. Now, any IRS agent with their eyes, I've read the document, their eyes would glass over. It would just be awful. So it's there. So what happens is I give away 49 shares out of my 100. My kids have 49%. So is their interest worth 49% of the company? It is not. That's a standard practice, valuations, courts uphold it, IRS upholds it, that's the deal. And so they have a minority discount or a control discount. They also can't sell it without my permission, so they have a marketability discount. Now, flip side, me, I own 51%. It's worth more than 51%. I have a control premium because I'm in control. I have a premium, so my 51% is worth more than 51%. A person would be willing to pay me more because they'd be in total control. And then think about if I just took 2 shares out of my 51 and I gave them the 2 shares. That gives them total control. Those 2 shares are worth a lot more than 2%. And that's the way valuations work. And again, historically, it had been used in estates and valuations like that. If you were going to sell an ownership interest in a partnership, somebody would value it. They would discount it for those things. So even if it's not in an IRA, you would still have those same kind of discounts. Again, we don't need that. That's what we're talking about here. So some considerations. It's a professional opinion. It's like, I think that Mark used this knife to stab Sharon. Somebody else says, no, they used this knife. It's just like a court. It's a professional opinion. The IRS can challenge it, okay? So we try to use discounts that are within the range. You'll find some folks, and we're not the only ones that do the discounts. Some folks do the discounts, but their amounts, I gotta make sure we're on taking time. So the problem with, they'll do some really aggressive numbers, and I just don't think it's a great idea. So let's say in my example, I gave 50% discount off 100. The IRS agent comes in, which, by the way, none of them know what they're doing. But they would come in, they would say, we don't believe Scott's value is correct. So your comment back was, okay, what do you think it is? It's not zero. It's legitimate. They don't think 50% is right. So they say, we think it's 40%. So you get to make a decision. That's 10% of 100, that's $10,000. So they're going to want me to pay tax on $10,000. If I'm in the 40% tax bracket, they want me to write a check for $4,000. At that level, I'm not understating my income or anything like that substantially. So they want me to pay $4,000. At that point, I decide, see, I can argue it, I can take an appeal. So I can hire John Heyer to fight my $4,000 tax bill, and I'll pay him $10,000 to do that. I'm not going to do that, right? Most people I talk to, you're just going to write the check for $4,000, and you're going to go on with your life. And you're going to be happy you still got a 40% valuation. So, yeah.
How often are these? Are these tested?
I'm sorry, what?
You've been doing it 3 years. How often are your discount valuations been tested?
Never. Yeah, they don't understand. We're going to give you this letter, this valuation letter, and you're going to give it to Equity Trust. Equity Trust is going to stick it in a file. Electronic file, not a paper file, but they're going to put in a file. It doesn't go to the IRS. None of this stuff goes anywhere. The only way it gets audited is if the Department of Labor, or in cases of IRAs, the IRS, were to audit Equity Trust. That's when they're going to do that. Usually 401ks or Department of Labor audits, that's only if there's a complaint. So I have a 401k at our office. Sharon's in that 401k. If she said, I'm a moron, and I've lost all her money, then she would turn into Department of Labor, and then I would get audited. But that would not have anything to do with my valuation stuff. So you wouldn't have that too much. But no, we haven't had anything challenged. And again, we still want to do it right. I can say, well, it's rarely ever going to be audited, so we're just going to get 98%. No, we're not doing that. I mean, we got to be honest, ethical. I still have a professional obligation as a CPA to properly appraise that value. Yep.
This is a very specific example, and I'm not looking for a discount from that. We have an investment in a joint venture with a guy who's doing well, who did Airbnbs, but he leased the properties rather than bought them.
Mm-hmm.
He passed away.
Okay.
His widow is broke. He doesn't own any of the Airbnbs. The furniture probably will stay there. Our IRA company told us that if we get a proof of death, they can value it at zero. Does that sound accurate?
Correct, yeah, probably. I mean, if that's all right, there's no assets, right? Just a business. He's sort of there's a thing called key man. It should be key man woman, so it's not sexist. But anyway, they call it key man. So if that person dies, this company's got a big problem.
Yeah.
In your case,
no access to run.
Right. And what a lot of times what companies do is they provide key man insurance. So if I'm the key man in my company and I die, the life insurance policy of $1 million goes to the company so they can hire somebody else to do what I do. So they can actually put so that's an ideal example of another one that potentially that has got zero value at all, because again, you're probably just shutting those things down and the money you put, you're gonna have right. I mean, you know, can you sell the furniture? Again, it's used furniture. There's almost no value. I could probably, if I really wanted to be picky, I could probably say, well, yeah, there's $5,000 worth of furniture. I mean, it's not. What are you going to sell furniture? Nobody wants to buy furniture anymore, you stuff. So you're fine. So yeah, probably that is correct to be down to zero. And they've even said, if you just tell us that he's dead, give us the death certificate, they're good. So that trustee, that custodian is fine with even doing it. Yeah, you're fine. Yep. Yeah, I think you're good. All right, so there's no guarantees in valuation. It could be challenged. We use a discount, like we talked about, 50%. That's within their range. Their range is basically, it's on the upper end of their range. Most of them, the range tends to be 40, between the 40 and 50, so we're sort of on the higher side. So we want to be a little aggressive, because likelihood of, because I still think it's legitimate. It's not that I think it's aggressive. I just think it's legitimate. We've had discounts as high as 95%. We had some folks who put together $500,000 note, and the guy, they lent the $500 to this guy for this land deal, and he took off. Just took off. And the only thing they had was a mortgage on a little corner lot worth $25,000. So $25,000 is 5% of $500,000, so they got a 95% discount. Now, in 3 years, maybe they've tracked him down, they've sent a couple of their thugs to break a few legs, and maybe they get their money back. And that's fine. At this time, it's only worth 5%. So they got a 95% discount on that. So that's what we do. So what are the questions? Yes, sir.
So Scott, let's assume that you're using your example again of the $100,000 in the syndication for Shack.
Yep.
So Equity Trust has the account. You're gonna discount 50%, so you're saying it's worth 50%. But 50,000.
Yep.
At that point, when you roll over through Equity Trust, does Equity Trust send you, is anything being sent to the IRS either from Equity Trust or from you or
how? Yeah. So the only thing that Equity Trust is sending the IRS is a 1099-R that said you converted $50,000 value in assets. They're not sending them anything else. Just so everybody's familiar with, there's a 5498 that you get in May. Sometimes you get them early and then you get a revised one in May. That will tell you the value of your IRA or Roth or whatever it is. So you do get that, but again, they're not sending them anything that does anything different. And that never really appears on it, right? Because I value it in November. You roll it. They rolled 50. I mean, if the IRS really wanted to try to calculate, they could say, well, let's see, the previous year, 5498, the value was 100. They converted 50, and now it's zero because there's nothing in that traditional anymore. So they could try to figure something out, but that's not the case. Yeah, good.
How do you determine how much you're going to discount for the lack of control marketability? Is that statutory or?
No, it's not statutory. So we use the control and marketability. We use our professional opinion, but we'll do studies of what the industry is used for, like lack of control and control premiums, to figure those numbers out. So we use stuff that is got historical basis in it. We're not just pulling numbers out of the air. There are some that I see and I'm like, you got to be pulling stuff out of here or you're behind. I mean, this is crazy. So no, you got to use something that's reasonable. But that's what we use. We try to use industry standards, but nothing statutory. Go ahead, Dan. Sure. It's when you're going to convert it.
Yeah, so if I convert it in a year that I've got a low tax rate, I don't get as much panic if I convert it. No, I want to get better in a year with a low tax rate.
Right, because you still have to pay tax on the 50, right?
So if I put money into a syndicated property, and that property is not projected, it was going to do well in 10 years.
It could be higher than 50. It just depends how long. But if you just got in it, you got in it 2 months ago, there's no performance issues yet. So it's 50%. Yeah, it needs to be a performance issue or like a key man issue. Because there was one. The guy didn't die, but he's the sole. I mean, if he's gone, if he died, I mean, there's going to be serious problems. So there's a lot of risk in that. we had the biotech company. That's just a risky venture. Now, you got to understand is when you invest in something that's risky, right, you have an anticipation of high returns because it's risky, right? So in essence, some of the risk is already in the value that you actually, or the money that you actually shelled over to invest in that asset. But we would potentially put a little bit more to it. So, yes.
How long will be in the syndication or in the property or out of your hands before you can put it back to do other things?
But give me that question again.
Well, if you're rolling over, if you've got a solo pay.
Yep.
$100,000 over. You're putting it in the syndication. How long does it have to stay there? Is there like a time limit that the IRS has to be gone for a year or 6 months or?
So you're talking after you convert it to a Roth?
No.
Before.
You said before.
Right.
You have to be there for 2 or 3 months.
No.
And then you can do the valuation, no?
I mean, no, I could do it a week later.
Okay.
This discounts still apply. Now, I will tell you from an optic standpoint, I don't like to do it like 2 days after you put it in. It's not much of an optic difference between 2 days and 3 months, but 1 to 3 months is our ideal sort of spot where we like to keep it.
And for tax purposes, would it be more advantageous to do it at the beginning of the year as opposed to the end of the year?
So it depends when you put it in. Because if you put it in January and you wait a whole year, could have been that they repositioned the apartment complex, right? So now it's worth more money. So there would be potential where it's not that it's not worth it, but it's just that it might have gone up in value. And now our cost to do the valuation, too, is going to be more expensive. What I will tell you is this, is that typically custodians want the valuation to be within 60 to 90 days of the date of the rollover. So in other words, if I value it July 1st, you probably need to do the conversion with Equity Trust within 60 days, so September 30th. Now, there's a benefit if you can get in something like in October, we value it on November 30th. Now you can sort of decide, hey, do I convert it in 23? Or I'm still within that window, right, where they accept that value. I could do it in January. Then it's not until the next year, so it's a whole year later that until I have to pay that tax.
That's what I was trying to figure out.
Yeah. But again, I like doing them better at the end of the year. But if I've invested and I've got no choice because maybe this, it's going to close, then I'm going to do it then. Yes?
How long does the money have to stay in the syndication after you've done the discount? So I'll give you an example. Like ILS out here has 1 year minimum holds. If you put $100,000 into Tom Berry's fund, you discount it 2 months after you put the 100 in, it values 50, and then you can pull the money out a year later.
Right. Yes, but your discount's probably not going to be as high because you just said, I can take it out after a year. I don't need permission, right? I can just take it out. So my lack of marketability, my lack of liquidity is lower than if I have to have Sharon's permission. Because it's already written in there that you can do that, right?
So the discount is smaller based on the length of time that you do not have control.
No, the control's still there. You don't have any control in the asset. But it's just the marketability. You can't, if I'm in a syndication and Sharon has total control or total decision making of whether I can sell it, that's the discount. Now, the truth be told, if I need to get out, I'm going to go to Sharon and say I really need to get out of this, and they probably are going to do it, but I can almost guarantee you they're not going to give me my whole $100,000. So that's where it comes in. The difference in yours is it's written in the agreement that you can just take it out after a year. So it's not necessarily the time. There can be a time. So let's say it says you can take it out freely after 3 years. That's a liquidity problem because you got it for 3 years. A year is not much of a liquidity problem. I mean, individuals may, that may be a problem for certain individuals, but that's not as much. So there can be a time frame if it's a liquidity issue, whether you can get out.
The IRS would nullify the discount.
Nullify what discount?
Tax savings. Put it in the syndication and take it right back out.
I mean, if you put it in and then took it right back out, it's not going to look very good.
Right.
So I don't know whether they would nullify. Well, when you say nullify, they may come back and say, well, Scott's valuation's a crock because you just moved it and then took it out 2 days later for $100,000. So if you're going to do that, yeah, don't do that because I'm going to tell you that's what it was. But if you end up doing that, then I think you're probably not in a really great position. Yeah, so don't do it as a, hey, I got a good way to get my money over there. So like, for instance, that partnership that I said they created, if they had then turned around after they converted it and then decided as a group they were going to go ahead and sell the property, yeah, I think they have a problem. Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Where do you find these assets that are appropriate?
All sorts. So there's, you've got people in your REAs potentially that do syndications, right? So somebody has an apartment complex. Typically it's accredited investors. Sometimes there's other ones. So you could have those folks. There are, I went to Dallas during September for a passive investor event, and there were a dozen companies there offering syndications. So you can, I don't know if Equity Trust Request would refer you to anybody. That may be not a good idea that they would do, but you do that. But then you can create a partnership where you're then going to do that control deal, right? And you could just buy a property. So if you and Mark are going to buy a property and you're going to use your IRA or your 401k traditional, and you know you want to convert it to a Roth, perfect example. So that set the operating agreement up correctly so that you get that. So you can create these yourself. Yes, ma'am.
If you have a solo K, can you buy the property as a partnership with somebody else as a manager?
Yeah. Hmm? Yep. Hold on.
Could you be a private money lender to somebody and it's discounted because you want some control or money?
Yeah. I had people ask that. It's still a note. So it would be a note. So the question is, who's going to buy your note? I mean, are they going to pay? If you're getting 15% and it's performing, I'll pay you that. You're fine. You know. Now, if it's not performing, I've got hard money lenders, and they can't sell the property, or they can't get their credit. The note is not worth as much. It's not performing. You may still be getting paid your interest, but it's not doing what it's supposed to do. I want my money because I want to redeploy it and charge 4 points. And so, yeah, there's a lot of those type of things. But just the fact that you lent it to me for 14%, you're still in control. You got a mortgage on my property probably and stuff like that. So, yeah. Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
How many discounts I should do in a given time frame?
There's no time frame. No, we have ongoing customers that when we originally did our first one with the big group, but we had done a few of them, and then we had a big group from New York, and now those people are just, you know, that's what they like to invest in, right? They like to invest in syndications. They like passive stuff. That's in your 401k. It only needs to be passive anyway. So, yeah, you can do them all day long. There's no number. I mean, you just got to be willing to cut the check for the taxes because they're still going to be there. So, you had a question, sir, in the back? You don't have to do it all at once. So if I value your $100,000 investment, you could convert half of it. Or you might have it all. The biggest problem I see is somebody will have their assets in an LLC. They do sort of a checkbook deal. And usually what has to happen is we can value that asset, but then you have to move it back to the IRA and then roll it. Because you can't roll it out of that. So normally, actually, we have you move it back to the IRA, then we value it, and then you convert it. Otherwise, they're basically saying you got to convert the whole LLC over, and so you got to work with your custodian. Yes, sir. Well, if it's an LLC, you're talking about a single member LLC?
Yeah.
So a single member LLC, you're in total control. So there's no, you really have to have a partner. That's where you got to like doing stuff with other people. If you don't, then that's not for you. Again, every strategy I ever talk to people about, they're good strategies, but for some folks, it's just not what they want to do. They want to do syndications, you know, that's just, you know, not what they want to do. I had a doctor who we talked about doing a short-term rental, cost seg, offsetting his $700,000 worth of W-2 income. But when I told him he had to run it, the short-term rental, materially participate, he said, I don't think so. He just didn't want to do it. Even though I could get him $300,000 deduction, it would be a pricey short-term rental. It did not work for him. And so every strategy is not for every individual. So. Other questions? Yes, ma'am.
So in the scenario where you're creating a loan out of property, loan out of property is supposed to be rehab. The borrower maps the property down because he's got some foundation easement issue. Consider that discountable.
So he had to tear the property down? Your collateral is less. I would look at the borrower because normally you still have a personal guarantee, right? But if the guy doesn't have two nickels to rub together, right? Because there are some. You get a newbie, no offense to newbies, but you have a newbie who has no money. Personal guarantees are there, but they don't hold a lot of weight. So your own, I mean, it may only be worth what that lot is worth. So yeah, that can be a discountable piece. Now that can either be, we could try to value that, or we put it up to the note market, because that's what that one company does. So they sell on the open market. They can tell you what you're going to get for that note. Right, so I think that, to me, I think in a note, I mean, if you're going to say, Scott, you want to buy my note? There's no collateral, but great guy. You want to buy my note? No. Don't have any desire. Now, if the guy has $3 million in the bank account, or his W-2 is $500,000, I'm probably okay. I probably would buy the note, because I know I can go after him to get it. But I probably want to make sure you have a really good file on this borrower, right? So yeah, I think you got some discount there. All right. We'll be around for questions. And we left some brochures about back on the back. There's three different pages that talk about why to do them, how they work, why you get the discounts, and then one about our process that we go through to do it. And there's our general brochure and card, and you're welcome to reach out. All right? Thanks.